Hey, piss boy.
Yeah?
How's it going?
I'm the only boy on the earth that pisses.
You
so
are!
That's why they call me piss.
That's boy. Why they call me. Everybody be quiet. I'm making piss.
Everyone else is just like, what is that yellow stuff? And so, sometimes it's kind of clear because you drink too much water.
Because you drink a lot of water, yeah.
Oh, my God, but no one else on earth has ever done that before.
No, no. You are the bona fide piss boy.
Polly's like, what do you mean you just got up? You were sending me porn
at
9
you were
a.m.
sending shit at 9 in the morning, and now it's just like, oh, no, I'm just one of those people.
Also, I had to pee like 30 times last night.
That's so much diabetes.
Yeah.
No, I definitely check my phone when I get up, before I get up.
Like, it's
time for my morning poison.
Like, if I like wake up in the middle of the night, like 4 a.m, I'll like look for like a second to see if anybody's messaged me or something. But I'm not sitting there for like another hour to doom scroll or look at porn or whatever.
I think that's legit. I think that's good. That's generally like recommended. Mm-hmm. I think that's good practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't stare at a blue light right before bed.
Fuck you fucking blue light people. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's fake. Just like global warming.
Does blue light affect sleep?
Be sure to ask Grok.
Well, the Sleep Foundation says...
Oh, gee, I wonder if they have any vested interest in this study.
Oh, yeah, Big Sleep.
Big Sleep over here. Big Sleep.
I mean, they are always doing sleep studies.
Making up fucking... Oh, blue light. That's the thing that does everything now. Whatever, man.
Harvard.edu.
Yeah, okay. That's about all I need to know about that.
Have the same effect. Blue wavelengths, which are beneficial during daylight hours because they boost attention, reaction times, and mood, seem to be most disruptive at night.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. Big Sleep. Whatever. Big Sleep is literally just lobbying this shit. Like, here's this fake study that we just did. Sleep study? Have you ever stopped to actually think about sleep study? Do you really need to fucking study to sleep? Who's fucking studying sleep? Just saying.
BB says the blue light from your phone isn't ruining your sleep.
There you go.
The research is mixed.
Who do you trust more? Who do you trust more? Mainstream media or Big Sleep?
Neither. That's a good bit.
Yeah.
We're full of them.
We are.
I'm looking at my Media 2026 list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at mine.
I'm not doing good right now. It's 6-20 against anime.
Damn.
I know I've got one game to rule them all.
One game to rule them all.
That one's coming up.
Yeah, I got. Yeah,
I bet it's Meteos.
I've been kind of looking at my own. Yeah, yeah, I bet it's Meteos. Yeah. Like, I haven't played games.
Or is it Chrono Trigger again?
Yeah, Chrono. There you go.
Here's 30 RPGs that are better than Chrono, or as good as Chrono Trigger.
I didn't say Chrono Trigger.
Yeah. Okay, you're right. You didn't say better. You said as good as Chrono Trigger.
I know.
I'm just like, which of those did you base your entire online personality on when you were 12?
Yeah.
You got to transcend the thing you based your whole entire personality on when you were 12. That's
not,
you got
to. Not according to some people. We've got Pokemon fans out here still.
Mm-hmm. Because whatever you base your personality on when you were 12 is arbitrary. So you gotta broaden the horizon. I mean, you and I happened to play the best ones when we were kids, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
Kids and teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, not everyone's so lucky. And, you know, we got to set a good example for them.
Mm.
Sure, it's all well and good to say, like, Chrono Trigger is the best RPG ever. But what about people that grew up playing, you know, the bad RPGs? Mm-hmm. We got to give them an example, say it's okay. More than, you know, 6 games.
I want to meet the person that was unfortunate enough to get Tecmo Secret of the Stars for Christmas. That's man, that's a tough one there. Like,
I don't know how many people played Tecmo Secret of the Stars and were convinced at a young age of the magic of RPGs.
No, I don't think that game would actively just be RPG repellent.
Those people are all like on the football team.
Yeah, they're on the football team. They are having sex with women.
I was going to say they're having sex. They're at the club.
Yep.
They're doing woodworking, playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
They got out of video games because of that one.
Mm-hmm.
They got, you know, maybe Secret of the Stars has had some positive effect on this earth.
I'm waiting for the revisionist history on Tecmo Secret of the Stars here on, you know, some weirdo is going to be like, no, you know, what if it's actually good? And then,
I'm waiting for it.
They'll make that their whole personality for an entire year.
I've never even heard of this game, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
It's just the most generic, like Breath of Fire 1 has more flavor. And even that tastes like a frozen turkey TV dinner.
That is the thing with Breath of Fire. I realized like this is real rough. It's still like in terms of like memorable bits, it's still probably on the upper echelon of like the mediocre tier of Super Famicom JRPGs.
Yeah.
It has that one dungeon where the whole screen mode 7 spins around every time you get on a spinner tile. Ooh, yeah.
It's a good effect.
That's the best part.
It's a good effect.
There's also the one where it shrinks you down and a mode 7's into the screen, so you're like a little mouse sized, and then you fight cockroaches.
Yep.
I don't know. This sounds like more flavor than Breath of Fire.
No, this is Breath of Fire.
This is Breath of Fire.
I'm not talking about Secret of the Stars.
No, I thought you were talking about Secret of the Stars.
No. This is Breath of Fire.
If I were to talk about Secret of the Stars, it would literally be just like, okay, so it's a fantasy RPG with a chosen one hero. There's a girl. There's a dragon. There's a legend. This is literally Tecmo Secret of the Stars.
I mean, there are oceans of games that are just Dragon Quest II.
Yeah.
Mm. We did our version of Dragon Quest.
We did our Dragon Quest II. Yeah.
All right. Are we about to kick off?
I wasn't sure if you were going to blabber before we did
it. Can I say one more thing?
You can.
I was 18 when Pokemon hit, and I was too old for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the people that grew up with it as middle schoolers refused to let go. So Pokemon became, like, a cool thing for college kids, age kids.
Oh.
Not kids at that point. Like early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
by that point, I'm, like, 25, 26 probably. I'm still too old for Pokemon.
You're still missing it.
I just missed. And now it's, like, this. It's just generational now. But I always feel like, nah, I'm just too old for that. You can't be 44. You got to be at least 40.
Yep.
Did you play... Didn't you play one of the Switch ones?
You played Sword and Shield.
It was bad, and I'm like, okay, I'm out.
It was pretty crappy.
Yep. Should have played the Lily one.
There you go.
She's a sweetheart. Moon. Yep.
So yeah, Pokemon is bad. We all agree. Welcome to the Soxcast, episode 184. Don't let anybody tell you any different. How's it going, Internet Land? How's it going, everybody? Are we ready? We ready to jump right into things? How are we feeling? We're feeling nice now that all the fucking cold weather's gone.
I took a long walk before this. It was real nice.
Yep. Got back from one.
I feel light.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Light and breezy.
Got a little bit of the old mop lopped off.
Nice. I have a lot of gray hairs now.
Oh, yeah. I don't doubt it.
Geez.
Yeah. I'm surprised I don't. Like, I am like... With the stress of the last 3 years, I'm honestly shocked that I don't really have, like, I've seen a few strays, but no, like, patches or anything, or, you know, I don't pull them out in a great quantity, but I definitely am noticing them now. They do. They'll pop down right into my vision because, you know, I have long hair, so it'll just, like, one single hair will just kind of plop down in front of my eye just to remind me, hey, guess what's happening? It's great.
Yeah, that's how it starts. As you have like the I see 3 gray hairs, and then it's like, oh, wait a minute. That's like there are a lot of those bad boys now. A couple years later,
I feel like I've been at the C3 gray hairs stage for like a decade, and it hasn't progressed somehow.
Well, that's good. That's good.
I'm lucky. Okay. Now the bald spot on top, we don't talk about that.
Oh, we don't talk about the bald spot. All right.
Last time I got my hair cut, I was like, what's that? She's like, you didn't know?
You didn't know you had a bald spot?
I'm like, uh-oh!
To my immediate virtual right.
A hat in time.
A hat in time? To my immediate virtual right, he has got a house call business for ladies looking for love. He calls it Load Runner.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah! Like, Video games and sex in the same opening, baby. Together at last. We finally peaked, everybody. Mm-hmm. How's it going, Rhett?
It's going.
Yeah.
I'm a little sleepy.
A little sleepy. Yeah, you literally just, this boy just literally got up like 5 minutes ago. So gonna be we're gonna make him go first too. That'll be fun.
Just be like, oh, little sleepy head.
Yeah, just go over there, ruffle his hair a little bit. Don't touch the bald spot though. He gets real self conscious about it.
No, there is no bald spot. What are you talking about?
Of course not.
Yeah. Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Just comb right over there, and nobody knows a thing. To my immediate virtual left, he is very disappointed in all of you. It's John.
It's because of bad RPG takes.
It is. I think that we have just kind of like reached a nadir lately of bad RPG takes. I feel like it is just intense as of late. RPG discourse.
I mean, let's be real. I've been playing heel. I get bored, and then I'm like, let's cause problems.
Let's cause problems on purpose.
Let's cause problems on purpose
from inside the house.
Yeah, no, this isn't on the community, Polly. One's me.
I didn't even just mean the community as a whole. I mean, even beyond our community, even places that I look at where I probably shouldn't, because social media is a cancer. Mm-hmm. But I have seen so much RPG discourse lately, and it's just kind of been weird. It's like, what game came out that caused this? This has to be somebody's fault.
Too much fucking RPG discourse. I really just wish people would stop trying to cause, like, repetitive, circular RPG discourse all the time. We don't need to talk about Final Fantasy all the time, y'all. Why does everyone keep bringing it up?
Maybe we could talk about how Chrono Trigger maybe isn't as good as everybody thinks it is.
I don't think anybody said that. I think people were saying other things. Polly, you know, if you starting the podcast with like a Pokemon dunk, Pokemon fans are used to that.
Yeah.
If you want to really piss people off, you want to start dropping those anti-mother takes.
Oh, yeah.
You got in your back pocket.
Oh, mother will get you fucking. Oh,
that'll get you shanked. Woo,
you will. Yeah, absolutely. No fucking question.
Just get those Mother 3.
And oh, look, it's just fucking Dragon Quest in a city setting. Fucking get out of here.
Literally nothing else.
Just go to a bar and say, fuck your mother. You'll get some hot opinions there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be like, hey, that's my favorite RPG trilogy. Just like grizzled biker guy at the bar.
Hey. Nobody says that about... Nobody talks about mother like that.
1989 Famicom classic. Is it 88? I think it might be 88. Mother 1.
Mother.
The Googling.
It was 89. Okay, I was right.
Tell your children not to walk my way. That's a good song. It's Mother. That's the joke. The song is called Mother.
Oh, I missed that. Sorry.
You can laugh now.
Okay, good.
You're not laughing.
Ha!
That's not a laugh.
Ha ha.
There you go. Okay, that was more of a chortle. I'll accept it in the interest of moving on. John!
Yeah?
What do you want to talk about?
I love Meteos!
Yeah?
I love the 2005 DS Classic Meteos!
I played that game when it came out. Thought it was pretty...
so long ago.
Thought it was pretty dope. You don't have to keep making me feel old, John.
I played a little bit of, I was like, I played so much Meteos, and I loaded up New Super Mario Brothers and then realized I hadn't played it for 20 years. New Super Mario Brothers is 2 decades old.
I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. And the amount of stuff from my adulthood that is turning 20 is like, nope, done here.
I'm out. We are not acknowledging the existence of the passage of time any longer.
And then I played like 4 levels and then was like, let's get back to Meteos.
Yeah.
So This one is like a slow indoctrination. As with many things, my wife is trying to poison my brain and get me hooked on her various twisted kinks.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is arcade puzzlers. What'd you say?
Not for me.
I know. I feel like it is very funny that I can just pull things out of my hat from like SMPS articles 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, Polly doesn't like these.
No. I'm too dumb for them.
See, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not a complicated pig. I like things that are simple, simple and shorts that are comfy and easy to wear. So here was the arc. Was we're wandering around Galloping Ghost, the greatest place in the world, largest arcade in I think North America. Or maybe the world, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And at least in terms of quantity of games. And I sit down in the Neo Geo aisle, because they have a whole aisle of Neo Geo games.
Heaven.
Mm-hmm. Heaven on Earth. To put a couple credits into Shock Troopers.
Yes!
Turn around. So what's this Puzzle Bobble game?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about that. I've never played this one. Hey, didn't people talk about Puzzle Bobble? I feel like I've heard a thing or two about Puzzle Bobble. And I load it up. And I play it for a while, and I'm like, this is kind of easy. Like, I get through, like, 8 stages before my credit dies. It's, like, 5 or 6 minutes for mm-hmm. my first stab. And then I put in another credit. And then I put in another credit. And mm-hmm. then I put in another credit. And then I put in another credit. And before long, I played Puzzle Bobble for, like, an hour and a half. Because we go to Galloping Ghost in, like, 8-hour chunks.
Yeah, so that's what you do at Galloping. You don't go to Galloping Ghost, you know, and have, like, a couple of... You know, play a couple credits and leave. No, you go there and you enjoy that lavish experience.
Uh-huh. They actually have, there's a hotel in walking distance mm-hmm. for I think Valentine's Day. We got a hotel like Friday night, spent a bunch of time at Galloping Ghost, stayed the night, and then went and spent all of Saturday at Galloping Ghost.
I could not think of a better Valentine's Day date, honestly.
Uh-huh. That's when Cecile won CC Fantasy Zone there on cabinet.
Go. On a cabinet.
So... I played the shit out of Puzzle Bobble, and then I went home and I played it constantly for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
It broke my brain.
Mm-hmm.
I tried Magical Drop mm-hmm. at the same time. I tried, just because I was like looking for another hit.
Money Idol Exchanger?
I didn't try that one. Super Puzzle Fighter 2, mm-hmm. and that one seems good.
I love that one.
Yeah, it seems real, real good.
Puzzle Bobble. I actually have some fun memories of Puzzle Bobble that does not uh-huh. involve me playing Puzzle Bobble. And that I worked a summer job for a number of years when I was younger, and mm-hmm. We had a I had a friend, and he was amazing at Puzzle Bobble, and. Oh, yeah. We would always take our lunch break or just, you know, your midday break or whatever. We would go to a gas station, you know, grab some refreshments or whatever. And they had a Puzzle Bobble machine. And every time we went in there, we would get him on the machine and just let him play. And our supervisor was cool and would just let him play till he either beat it or he lost a credit. And it would always end up being like a 20 or 30 minute break.
Oh. So fucking
it was only supposed to be like a 5 to 10 minute break.
So good.
Yeah. So that was always fun. That's my fun memory of Puzzle Bobble. That said, I do like Puzzle Bobble. I can play Puzzle Bobble. So
that's the thing. Puzzle Bobble is pretty simple.
It's very simple to play.
It's all execution. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, recognizing where to shoot. There's a little bit of strategy to it, but it's mostly like figuring out the angles.
Yeah.
Getting consistent at putting the ball where you want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think I dropped a save state on like level 20 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I could get to level 20 in one credit, and I could get from level 20 to the end in one credit after a lot of tries. I never was able to string
after the
like
whole
2 weeks.
Together.
I was able to string the whole thing together because boy howdy, it is like a 30 or 40 minute run.
Yeah, yep. That
feels like death.
As somebody who saw that game beaten many times, it is a 30 uh-huh. or 40 minute run.
It is beefy. And so I played Puyo Puyo at Galloping Ghost with Cecile, and she fucking crushed me.
Oh, I don't know that. Like,
Puyo was devious.
It was like 9-1 or something, or like 20-2 because we played it a while. And I was just like, I don't like this. I like Puzzle Bobble. And then Cecile was like, oh, you've got to... just study some basic chaining guides online. And I'm like, I'm not going to do homework so I can play a video game.
No. I'm going back to Puzzle Baby.
I'm going to go back to Puzzle Baby. So Poyo was just like, for 2 weeks, was in my head as just like this game for weird savants.
That's how it still appears to me.
So Cecile, a little while ago, handed me, I think, she just had Poyo on her DS. There's like 4 Poyo games on DS. And one of them is Poyo Poyo 15th Anniversary Edition. And it has a couple exercises for just teaching you how to do a couple basic chains.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing it, and I asked if I could play it a bit, and I did it. And then I did like 10 minutes of these things, and I was like, oh, that's how you get a 3 chain.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. And then I started playing a bunch of Poyo, and then I started playing even more Poyo Poyo, and I was getting to the point where I could get to 3 and 4 chains pretty consistently. And Cecile can get 5 chains, which are the insta-kill ones.
Yeah.
But I can get 3 and 4 chains pretty quick. So it's kind of a crapshoot. Like, I will either she gets to her 5 chain and insta-kills me, or I interrupt her before she can.
Yeah.
It's a little hard for her to recover.
You can kind of death by 1,000 cuts the other player if you're quick enough.
Mm-hmm. That game really seems like it's whoever shoots first.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't understand this, but the original Poyo Poyo didn't have any offsetting. Whatever garbage which is a mechanic introduced in Poyo Poyo 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever garbage you generate is sent to the other player. In Poyo Poyo 2, the garbage gets queued up, but then if you can create a big chain in the time that it's queued up, you can, instead of sending garbage, you delete the garbage that they sent to you. So high level Poyo Poyo 2 play
is letting it pile up.
It's people doing 5 chain and then 5 chain and then 6 chain and then 5 chain and 5 chain back and forth, deleting, so that just constantly deleting each other's garbage until one person gets slightly ahead and then instantly they die. Yep.
That's how it always works. That's how every competitive Puyo Puyo has ever gone that I have seen.
That's so dope. So I feel like I cracked Poyo Poyo, at least to the point where I can have casual fun with it. I really like Poyo Poyo Fever. I think that rule set's really fun. And I was gonna, I had my DS because Cecile and I were playing Poyo on the plane ride. We both have flashcards. We were playing versus Poyo on the plane to visit my family. And then I noticed, you know, Meteos was on the flashcart. I'd never tried it. I wanted to try Meteos. I wanted to try Lumines. I've never played either.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding was that they're both Tetsuya Mizuguchi games. Mm-hmm. I might have gotten that wrong, but the Tetris Effect guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tetris Effect, Rez, Lumines.
Yeah.
But I was actually wrong. He produced Meteos, but the central game design director on it was Sakurai of Smash Brothers.
Yep.
Which I didn't know.
The guy.
But then you load it up and it's like directed by Sakurai, and then you get to the menus and it's like, oh yeah. It looks like Smash Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing as booting up Kirby Air Ride and being like, oh, this is this is the same energy. So I played a little bit of Meteos and was like, this is a little bit inscrutable. And then I play a little more, and then I play a little more, and then I play a little more, and I play a little more, and then I played it constantly the whole trip. It's the only thing I played, and it's the only thing I've been playing since I got back. I looked at my stats right before this call, because I played it a bunch this morning. I have 16 hours on Meteos.
That's so much Meteos.
All in the last, week.
Wow.
So that was the buildup, is I my brain has been opened to arcade puzzlers, to block go down games. I played a chunk of Tetris. I played a little bit of Poyo Poyo Tetris, which seems really fun. The adventure, the story mode in that seems really cool. I'm kind of excited to dig in there. But for whatever reason, Meteos was the one that just got its claws in me.
Yeah.
And so blocks are falling from the ceiling, as they are wont to do. Mm-hmm. That's their favorite thing.
It's they love nothing more.
And if you line up 3 blocks in a row or column, They don't disappear. They launch. They rocket towards the ceiling of the stage.
It's a real cool thing. I like this mechanic a lot.
It's very cool. And anything that's on top of them also gets rocketed up. Mm-hmm. But there's gravity, and the more things that are on top of it, the slower they rocket up. But as things are rocketing up, if they're going slowly, you can do more chains in the block. And then create more rockets and then make it propel up further. And if you send them off the top of the screen, then that sends to your opponent as garbage, just like Puyo. So probably about 5 hours in, I cracked the meta here for most of the stages, which is you want to start chaining together all of your match threes in such a way that you have the entire screen full of blocks and all of them are being rocketed up very slowly because it's heavy towards the top of the screen. And then you let them land, and then right before your combo breaks and they all disconnect, you rocket them up, you match three more, and then they get rocketed up again. And as you do that, the rockets get stronger and stronger until the entire screen blocks runs towards the... gets rocketed off the stage, and you get a full screen clear. And it feels really good.
Yep. That game's got real good game feel, but it's Sakurai. And having heard him talk at length about game feel, I am not shocked that he made a puzzle game have just super crunchy game feel.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, it feels really good. And so the second thing that really unlocked it, probably like 7 or 8 hours in, because I was doing the story mode, and the mission mode has like specific tasks that seemed impossible. Mm-hmm. Like the first, like one of them was clear the entire screen of Meteos. And I was like, how am I supposed to do that consistently? Oh, that's how. And then one of them was send 75 Meteos off the stage in one go. Mm-hmm. Cause there's not just the rocket combo. There's also a combo meter on the right. That's like, it's constantly ticking down. And if you don't send any blocks off the stage for like half a second, then the combo ends. But if you keep sending them like consistently,
you keep
then
saving the combo,
it'll tick up. And the mission was like send 75 at once. And you can send a whole screen of blocks off the stage and it's like 50 or 60. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is impossible. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do this. The thing is, you can hold the L button and it'll fast, because blocks are constantly raining from the ceiling.
Yeah.
And you can fast forward that process to make blocks fall faster. Oh, so you can give more material for your chains. And if the whole screen is full and they're being rocketed, they're actively being rocketed, then anything that's landing at the top is automatically
taking off
as garbage.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is be filling up the screen, the entire screen with blocks, and then holding L to fast forward, send even more blocks over, and then keep a combo going as long as you can. And if you drop it, then you suddenly have an entire screen of garbage that you have like 3 seconds to deal with before you instantly came over.
What the heck?
It's extremely high risk, high reward type feel.
It's very well thought out.
It feels so good. There's like 30 planets, which have like different block. The basics are the same, but they all have like slightly different gravity and a few different other effects.
Yep.
So you have to learn how to play the different planets. And there's a couple that have like actual gimmicks, like the second to last stage in story mode, Havendor. It's like super low gravity, so anything you match will just instantly vanish from the screen, which seems like it could make it easier, but that's true of the opponent players too.
Yeah.
You're dealing with a lot of garbage,
yep.
and you can't build a full screen combo because you can't chain them together, so you have to just be like sending them in 3 to 5 block chunks, and it's actually really hard. So my 10-hour journey, I got it on the plane ride home, was getting the true ending, where you complete all the missions and fight true Meteos. Instead of just fighting the planet Meteos on its own, you fight 3 of them at once. And they're all targeting you and sending garbage at you. And it's very satisfying. when you do it well, they if you do it badly, they just overwhelm you instantly. And if you do it well, the whole stage is over in like 45 seconds.
That's cool.
But the so the true so the thing is though, I got the true Meteos ending with continues.
Mm.
And every time you continue, your score is halved.
Ew.
What if I could get the 1cc?
What if?
What if I got 1cc Meteos? So that's been the last week.
haven't snagged it yet?
It's a lot fucking harder. No, yeah. I have not. I can beat every individual stage just fine, but I keep getting fucked up. It's the same as Puzzle Bobble.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. It's hard to get the whole thing to kind of come together.
Yeah,
it's like your brain. Like for me, it's like run. It's like my brain just kind of shuts off about halfway through a 1cc like that. Because I've tried the 1cc Puzzle Bobble, and it's just like I'm okay at it. I know I'm not bad enough that I'm going to lose my credit at any lower level or anything. But when you get to a certain point, it's not like the difficulty of the puzzles. I just feel like my brain just starts going, "Oh man, oh man,
I just can't. I can't align three colors in a row anymore."
Yep.
Yeah, I mean that's the damage is like I'll be in the final thing and I'll make one mistake and now suddenly I have the whole screen full of blocks and I'm like, yep. I know if I just stay calm and just make the right stylus gestures, I can line up a block for every column and save the day. But my brain will just freeze and I'll just be unable to see. See the colors and see the patterns.
Yep.
Every now, sometimes I line it up and it's just like, oh, just stay calm, take a deep breath, because it's not because the windows are very generous. It takes when your blocks go off the top of the stage, there's like a good 3 seconds before you actually die, and in that time, if you can rock it up, the columns are about to kill you, then you're good.
Yeah.
But boy. When the pressure's on, could you hear my kitty just then?
Yep.
Oh, sweet girl. Oh, she loves us. Oh, she wants to hang out. All right, I'm finishing up my segment, so I'll take care of her in a second. But yeah, Meteos, it's just fun as hell, and you can constantly like. There's a bunch of unlocks you get just by like playing the game. You get currency to buy planets for the versus mode and whatnot. It's just like fun to unlock things as I go. I've almost got everything now just from naturally playing the game in ways I find fun.
I like it when a game is fun like that, where it's fun to do the unlocks, even though it's just normal tedious unlock bullshit, which is stuff that they could have just given you out the gate anyway. Yeah. I think that like when you've got a good fun game like Meteos and the gameplay loop in and of itself is really fun. You know, like that just adds that little itty bitty little cherry on top.
Number go up,
like, yeah. Just real satisfying.
It'd be so obnoxious if the game was like, I think the unlocks in Super Smash Bros. Brawl go way too far.
Oh, that sure. Was, yeah.
I was going to say, really Sakurai loves unlockables.
Yeah.
And the fighting game community hates that when it's characters.
Yeah. Oh, I think Kirby Air Ride and this one hit a balance where the game themselves is so like simple and bare. That just having that extra structure is kind of nice.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to play more Kirby Air right now. They should make another one of those.
They did, John. They did.
That doesn't sound. I would feel like I would have heard of that, right? If they made another Kirby Air Ride.
It was the hot game for like a week.
Yeah, like literally, I saw it on my timeline for a week, and then it was nowhere to ever be spoken of again.
I'm pretty plugged into Kirby now, y'all. I feel like I would have looked if I heard that there was like a 0-2 boss fight in the new Kirby Racing game that you can play that has a remix of his final boss theme. I would have been like, oh, I need to watch this right away. But yeah. All right, so yeah, puzzle games are fun as hell. Kitty, you sweetheart. I know you love me. I'm going to spray you with water. All right. I'm going to give me once. All right. I'm right. All right. Let's
go to take the reins here, John.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's pass it off.
All right.
Meteos rules.
Meteos is cool. I wish I was smart enough to play games like that.
I feel like I just don't feel like it's, I feel like if you can transition into it slowly and build up to it.
I think my brain, brain gets hung up at just like the inability to think like three moves ahead. My brain just goes, I can't, nope. My brain just seizes up because I'm too stupid to have more than one thought at a time.
Oh, I feel you. Seeing ahead for the Poyo chains is crazy.
I don't know how people... That's just literal... Those people are actual wizards and they cast magic. I don't think they're playing video games. I think they're literally just... They are literally just casting magic spells. And they're not doing... And they're not letting people know they're casting magic spells because that would just take away, you know, some of the mystique of it all.
I mean, don't even get me started on Tetris.
Oh, geez.
I think I feel like Tetris and Poyo are comparable. They're both
I think they're
both wizard games.
Yeah, for sure.
The way Tetris players will look at the like entire queue and the ones that have like three parts ahead, and just like it's like they're just telepathically putting the part in the right spot.
They're like plotting, they're plotting five moves ahead. It's crazy.
Like the brick
and T-spins.
The next brick hits the top of the well, and they've literally already got it flash drop down to the pile.
It's like,
what is happening? How did you know to do that?
T-spins are crazy. Yes, I learned that.
T-spins, honestly.
I learned that the last week was like, oh no, this ain't your granddaddy's Tetris.
Hey, I'm not a granddad yet.
But yeah, I'm a granddad. I played Tetris on Game Boy. That was my first Tetris.
T-spins to me are like, but it wouldn't fit like that if it was actually rotating.
Yep.
That's cheating.
Sounds like you don't appreciate the SRS rotation system, Brett.
Exactly. Like the four bar going down the hole, that makes sense. The T-spin, like, wedging itself into a 45-degree angle.
That's insane.
Like, no, son.
You're cheating. You're just taking advantage of the code. You cheated not only... You cheated the game, but also yourself.
Not only the game, but yourself.
And then in Poyo versus Tetris, you have to be T-spinning to...
Yes.
That's the thing. I tried... I played as Poyo Tetris. I played Poyo versus the normal difficulty Tetris player, and I destroyed them. And then I played Tetris versus the normal difficulty Poyo player, and I played 20 rounds in a row and failed. time. And I was like, they just decimated me. And I was Googling it, and it's like, yeah, no, you have to do T-spins. I'm like, what the fuck is that? I watch a video, and I'm like, what?
Tetris you grew up with?
Literally, what are you doing? What have you done to my poor Tetris?
There's a thing I found last night because we're watching a puzzle game YouTuber, and it's like an exercise for Tetris. It stays moving slowly, and it generates garbage at the bottom of the screen with like one hole at a random place. Mm-hmm. And the goal is clear 100 lines of garbage and as few blocks as possible. Mm-hmm. So you can't just you have to be like moving. You can't just like stay alive. You have to be actively moving down through these piles of garbage. Right. And it was like, if you can do this in under 300 pieces, then you're good. If it's over 400, then you're a beginner. And I'm like, and I played it for 10 straight minutes and I cleared 10 lines of garbage in about 300 pieces.
Oh boy.
And then I lost. And it wasn't moving fast. And I'm like, oh no, the skill ceiling here is really crazy too. Oh shit. Wait, you have to look ahead. You have to look ahead multiple Tetris pieces.
Oh God.
No,
this is not how Tetris was meant to be played. Y'all have bastardized it. Sorry, Alexei.
Go ahead.
My funniest online gaming moment was getting Tetris versus Puyo and playing online, and then immediately realizing that these are games that people have been practicing for like 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like the level one casual beginner who hasn't played in like 10.
Tetris 99.
I did a 2-chain.
Loading up Tetris 99 and immediately being like among the first three people out.
I'm okay. I mean, okay, at launch Tetris 99, I was okay at because... There were so many other people that were also in that new...
Yeah.
Haven't played.
But now it's only the sickos playing.
Yeah, now it's probably only the sickos playing and you can't get anywhere. But yeah, Tetris versus Poyo at launch was immediately like sickos only.
The sickos are here. They know. They smelled the blood in the water. They were waiting outside.
Yeah.
Tetris 99 still online?
I think so. It's Mario they killed for some reason.
I know the F-Zero one is still online too.
Oh, good for them. That does sound fun.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking insane shit. I mean, it's the same thing as fighters. Sure. Like the skill ceiling is just infinite.
Yeah.
It's just fighters feel more graspable to me.
Fuck me. They all seem inscrutable.
No. Fighters felt graspable to me when it was Street Fighter 2, and then Street Fighter 2 Turbo is too fast.
I did play like 20 rounds of Turbo with Cecile, and it felt really good.
Mm-hmm.
God. Cool. I don't know. There's a bunch of... I feel like this is the closest I've gotten in recent memory to unlocking competitive games.
Oh, okay.
To unlocking a versus game.
Sure.
Because I like playing... Because video games are supposed to be played alone. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be played... You're alone.
Exactly, yes.
At a cabinet or playing... You download an RPG Maker game from itch and experience a story. You play a little arcade. You play ASDF2 by yourself and get a high score. You get a shmup 1cc. You're not supposed to play them with people.
No.
That's stupid.
That would be silly.
That's just diluting the... That's diluting the magic.
They're taking half of your fun.
Exactly. But if you play games that way, it does kind of lock you out of certain experiences. Like, sure. I'd really like to learn more about fighters, and mm-hmm. I'd really like to learn more about these puzzle games. And you kind of do need to play against people to really appreciate that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I've tried finding ways to play. There's ways to enjoy fighters as a solo player, but when you sit down and play like 30 rounds with another person that's about on your skill level, it feels really good.
Yeah, that is a very, very good feeling.
Mm. So,
all right.
Who knows? Can't do that with Meteos though.
No.
The idea you can playing Meteos with another person is would be a Herculean feat right now. Maybe you could. I need to. If you want to emulate it, you'd have to switch to doing it with the mouse.
Yeah, you'd have to.
And I don't know how that would feel.
That would not feel great. I don't like the. Yeah, I've tried kind of playing around with stylus being substituted mm-hmm. for it. No, there's a tactile feeling you have when you're actually using a stylus that is really required for an experience like that.
Oh well, good news that spraying the kitty with water did seem to help.
Nice job. Nice job. Yeah. Get the fuck out of here.
The entire Soxcast community just like turned against
them. Yeah. I mean, not that they hadn't multiple times in the past. Like, this is really nothing new for them. This is just, I'm convinced that there's like a secret TMZ site that's just John and they only report on all the shit John does every day that pisses people off.
Look, I love her. I played with her for 15 minutes before the podcast.
I gave you my time.
I petted her. And okay,
oh, yeah, I heard that
one. Ooh, someone's itching for another spray.
This is the saga.
I got it right here. I'm at the ready.
This is the saga for the episode right here.
I think I don't know why this hasn't come up before. Like, she is very needy,
mm-hmm.
and we give her what she needs. I love our cat.
Sure.
She's probably like 14 years old now. She's an mm-hmm. old sweet cat.
Mm-hmm. And you're spraying her.
And you're spraying
water.
Her with water.
Uh-huh. She darted away pretty quickly that time.
Oh, damn.
I think it's better to just get to the point where holding the water bottle up sends the message.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to actually be spraying
them. Yeah, I think that's what we're going for here. I think that's the idea behind
it. Well, that's not... I'm not at that point, Rhett. No. If you want to get to that point, you do have to spray them first.
I feel like spraying near
water.
Them also really sends a message.
Yeah.
It's harmless. It's fine. This isn't... I'm not abusing the poor thing.
I love what we're making this sound like the most awful thing you can do.
It's a little fine mist of water. People in England walk outside and face the same thing daily.
All right. I did stuff.
Tell us.
Anime? Do you like anime?
Oh, boy. Anime time.
Anime time. Anime time. Let's go to anime time.
It's a podcast within a podcast.
It's a podcast about anime. Do you like Goku?
Yeah, I love Goku.
Well, we've got Goku.
He could beat Superman in a fight, I think.
You bet your ass.
Just nonstop heal this week.
Yep.
It's
So I just recently watched a show called Jellyfish Can't Swim at Night.
Oh boy.
This is one that's kind of been on my list for a while, because like literally I think everybody I know has recommended it to me.
I sure did.
Yeah. This is another kind of like a girls band show, but it's a lot of cool, interesting twists on the idea. Now I'm not like an expert on this genre, so I can't say if anybody's ever tackled it like this before, you know, with the base premise. But, so we've got a main character, Mahiru, and she is an artist who gave up drawing because people made fun of her art style. And on the other side of that coin, there's Kano, and she was in an idol group. And she got blacklisted by the industry because she punched the shit out of one of her group members. You want to get me on board with a character? Let me know that they punched out a fellow idol and got blacklisted for it. I think that's rad. Like that girl immediately.
Yes.
So, long story short, the two end up meeting and realizing that having kind of, you know, Mahiru been a fan of her music and Kano having seen her art before, they realize that they've actually inspired one another and throughout their own creative pursuits. Kano lets Mahiru in on the fact that she's been making music again under an anonymous identity. So they kind of end up mashing their talents together to kind of create their own little virtual singer. So you've got, you know, idol coming back, and then, you know, just doing it under the guise of anonymity, and then somebody whose art has been made fun of and, you know, she gave up on. Now she's got a use for things. And then there's two other girls that end up getting pulled in. Mahiru has a childhood friend named Kiyui, and she's good at computers, video editing, and she's also a VTuber. And then there's Mai, who is an absolute maniac.
Is this an anime original?
Yes. Yeah. She is a super fan of Kano's from when she was in the previous idol group, but she also happens to be a really good pianist and composer. So you can see how kind of everybody kind of conveniently slots together, and it kind of becomes almost this cute little revenge story where, you know, everybody's kind of fighting back to, you know, like find a piece of themselves or to use their creativity to fight back to some form of like, this is the thing that I want to do despite it being taken from me. And it's really, really cool. And the show is much deeper than that. I know that like the kind of key art that you can look at the art and it's just immediately like, oh, it's one of those. You know, I didn't even know the show was about music. I just looked at some key art. I was like, I bet that's a girl band show.
Yeah.
But there's
four of them.
There's four girls. They've got wildly different looks. You know, you can kind of pinpoint, oh, well, there's the wild one. There's the outsider. There's the normal one. And it does do all that. It does a lot of the typical girl band things. But I think that this is a show that's doing a lot more in that it explores a lot of very heady concepts and themes associated with not only like being a creative, but finding and actually learning to love the things that make you uniquely you. And that's not only like in the creative process and your passions, but this is a show where I kind of feel like every character is kind of going through this time in their life where they're asking the question, is it okay for me to exist and occupy space?
That's a story kind of tuned to gut.
Yeah.
A lot of us.
There's a lot of good stuff. I think the best character is Kiyui myself. And I'm not just saying that because she's my favorite. She's the VTuber / shut-in girl. But I think her story and her struggle with trying to exist in a world where you want to be seen and not observed, it deals with gender identity. She is a character that is very much like The show doesn't go on to define it, and I think that it's smart for doing this because, again, this is, you know, mostly a child, and there's just figure. Like, I think that this show does a good job of depicting kids figuring shit out. So it's just like, I think the way that it handles the things that it's handling, it does it very subtly. Like, there's no big, there are moments where characters have these big, loud anime moments and, you know, we're all crying and we're running to each other and we're hugging. But then there's a lot of nuance and things that I was watching this show that I kind of found interesting, and like the animations and the way certain characters would kind of emote when certain things were being talked about. Like with Kiyui especially, I noticed that, like, she doesn't look people in the eyes when she talks. Like, when certain topics come up, even when she's not in the conversation, you very much is a case of shirking away from it physically. And I just think that the out and out loud stuff in this show is very good. I just think that you, like, look at the subtle things that are happening too. Like, this is a very smart show in ways that I was not expecting. And I think the only flaw with this show is that it's only 12 episodes.
Yeah. Especially the final episode, I thought was,
man,
like,
it's all really rushed
too much.
Yeah. And I still think the show does a great job of mining the depths of these characters and their relationships. I just think that it have had more breathing room to really kind of let you live in their heads for a little longer, to kind of let, like, to not everything is over in one or two episodes when, you know, a major thing comes up. Like, I think this may have basically ended up a flawless series, but that's really my only complaint, is that it's just not long enough to let these things breathe a little more, because I can see a lot of people who maybe aren't catching the subtlety of the things that are happening, or maybe who want those big moments to feel a little more earned. I can see people not liking this because things kind of, like, you know, you'll be one episode and then 3 months later something's resolved, but it's literally just the next episode. Like, that can be jarring, especially if you're marathoning it. It definitely made the pacing feel weird. I don't know how that would have felt watching more on a week-to-week basis, or if that would have changed much of anything, but that's really my only complaint. Like, it's just, this is a great watch. It looks amazing. The music's fun. And I just really enjoyed the exploration of the characters, even if it can just feel a little rushed at times. You watched this one, Rhett.
I recommended this to one of you like 2 years ago.
Yeah. What'd you think of it?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. I think, I don't remember if it was my number one that year, because I think I might have ended up watching Maigo
right
in that same year, but it was definitely like one or two.
Yeah.
But yeah, the last episode was like, well, this may have just gone from a 10 to a 9.
Yeah, that was kind of my thing. It was just like, oh, it's just so rushed.
Like, obviously everything was going to work out, but it worked out very quickly.
Yeah, it worked. It almost to the point of contrivance, you know.
Even if it was like 13 episodes instead of 12.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, even one episode would have kind of smoothed that out a little bit. But yeah, like if we could have just gotten more time with those characters, I think it would have been just an all timer. Like, as it stands, I think it's just really great.
I will recommend it.
You know, and say, hey, You want a really cool girl band show that is doing something very cool and has some really cool storytelling chops and subtlety to it. I think this is definitely a show that you got to check out.
It's kind of different from the normal girl band show because the main character is an artist.
Yeah,
like, it doesn't really contribute to the music at all.
Yeah, yeah. She plays triangle. Come on, man.
Oh,
it's very vital.
Oh, now it's K-On.
Oh, shit.
I was going to say, y'all have enough now that you can create a genuine girl band show anime tier list.
K-On is just a tier, and it just means shit.
That's at the bottom. That's K-On.
It's just K-On.
Is Maigo at the top?
Yes.
I'll know the
Maigo's definitely at the top.
Maigo is amazing. Yeah. And even they have a bad last episode.
Well, they have the first episode of
Ave. It's basic. End. Yeah. The last episode of Maigo is basically the first episode of Ave Mugica. So.
Okay. So K-On at the bottom, Maigo at the top, Ave Mugica, Ave Mucusa.
Mucusa. In the middle. I might as well call it
K-On, but still pretty low.
Yeah.
Above, all right, middle, bottom.
I would watch Ave Musica again before I ever looked at K-On!'s direction. So.
Oh, for sure. I mean, K-On! For me was like not really a girls band show.
No, no.
It stopped. They care about the music so little.
Yeah. It's literally just a tea time show disguised as a band show.
What's wrong with tea?
There's nothing wrong with tea, but if you're going to market a show to me and say it's a music show, and then it's just like, no, let's just drink tea and eat snacks for 24 episodes, I'm going to throw your fucking show in the trash where it belongs.
And then Bochy somewhere.
Oh, right, Bochy. Bochy's still pretty high.
Bochy is real high. I don't know that I would put it on my go level. But I love Bochy the Rock a lot.
I haven't seen Maiko.
Yeah, Maiko's really good.
Sorry, I'll watch anime again someday.
No, you.
I've got my like tier list of like, okay, I need to start. I want to start reading and watching movies more again, mm-hmm. instead of just playing medios.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I want to listen to music more. And so I want to listen to actual new albums. Mm-hmm. And then at the very bottom, want to watch more TV. Want to watch TV again. That's the lowest priority, but it is there.
Right.
Is anime counted in TV?
Anime is the top tier of TV.
It's the top part of TV. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I got you.
And then there's like Western cartoons, and then there's like, I do want to, you know, I would like to go back to Breaking Bad someday and watch the whole thing. It's a good show.
It's great.
Oh man.
I watched all of it when it was only like 3 seasons, so I didn't see the whole story.
Yeah, I need to get back to Better Call Saul because I have not seen the last 2 seasons.
God, too much art.
Too much. a couple other anime quick fires here. I rewatched the original Steins Gate anime. Fantastic
I can't
adaptation.
You rewatched the whole thing without me noticing. Like, that's a big
That's
boy.
So funny. Yeah.
Yeah, that's 20.
You did so much science adventure, Paul. There is. Science bring up a score.
You see where we're going.
Yeah. We're gonna time for some science adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I watched the first Steins Gate anime. Amazing adaptation. I think it's probably one of the best. Like, it only omits some things that are maybe bigger to, you know, to the bigger overarching of science adventure in a whole, but you don't need that stuff to enjoy a really good time travel adventure. Rewatched Steins Gate Zero, and my initial impression of that show was not very good, because I had read the visual novel, and I really like that VN a lot. I like the way that it portrays Rintaro and just kind of being completely broken and the journey to getting him back to where he needs to be to do what he needs to do. And for some reason, the anime just did not hit me right. But on this rewatch, I was just like, no, like this is solid. This is pretty good. I don't think it's as good as season one. But I still think that this is a solid adaptation of what that original story did. And it's just a real good story anyway. So,
no way. I'm a little like hazy on Steins Gate Zero. Is there a way to edit it so that like you do the original series minus the last 2 episodes, then Steins Gate Zero?
Yeah,
and then
you could do that. Yeah. Yeah. That could actually be done. Because that's just literally how the timeline works.
Director's cut.
Yeah, there you go. you just smoothly, seamlessly go right into Steins Gate Zero without, you know, actual true ending happening. Yeah, that would be funny. That would be really good. But we are not done with science adventuring yet. There's still a little more to do because I actually just finished Chaos Head Noah. So this
also science adventure.
Also science adventure. This is the first science adventure game, actually. So this is where everything is established. And I was actually playing this back in 2024. But big major incident at the end of the year happened, as you might guess, maybe able to guess what that might have been. Torpedoed my desire to want to do anything. And this game ended up being on the unfortunate end of the stink of that time. Where it was just like, oh, man, I can't look at this game right now. I just can't. Like, I don't want to be anything that reminds me of where I was or what I was doing when all that happened. So, with having rewatched Steins Gate, it was just like, you know what? Maybe it's time. Let's see if we can shake the stink off of Chaos Head Noah. And I was able to do it. So that felt really good because I love the science adventure series. And I didn't want to kind of just have the first game always be there. It's like, well, I'm not going to touch that one. But the main premise is that this is a psychological horror game, and it centers on a character named Takumi. He is a very non-standard protagonist. He is somebody who is very unpleasant. He is like the definition of toxic high school boy that is a shut-in anime neat that, but he is also traumatized. There is a reason for why he is the way he is. It's just, I think a lot of people can't get past him as a main character because he can be so off-putting. And just
a visual novel with a shithead main boy?
This guy is a shithead in ways that I've never seen one portrayed before.
That's saying something. We've read a lot of shithead boys.
This guy is a real shithead.
And apparently, Gintaro, pretty bad in Steins Gate, the visual novel.
Not really. No, he's just more overblown.
He's annoying.
He's annoying. Absolutely. And I think he's supposed to be.
So this is more like actually don't like this guy.
Oh, yeah. Like, people's main complaint, I think, about Chaos Head is that Takumi is just so fucking hard to want to be in the head of. So he's a mentally scarred little boy from an incident that happened when he was young, and the game focuses on delusions, and anytime he is in a situation where he feels uncomfortable, you can choose to have him have a positive delusion, a negative delusion, or no delusion at all. And, like, positive delusions usually involved, oh, the girl wants to get sexy time with me. And negative delusions typically go toward the more violent, horror-y side of things.
Quick addendum while I'm editing. Something I failed to mention during the recording about Takumi as well as other characters' delusions is the existence of people known as gigolomaniacs. Gigolomaniacs are people who have suffered some form of suffering or trauma who are able to reboot their delusions into reality. This can happen involuntarily, but can eventually be harnessed and become something they do voluntarily. This is a key component to the main story's mystery and conspiracy, as well as all of the action scenes that take place throughout the VN.
So that's kind of like the boy's head that we're going to be dealing with. So, over the course of the game, a series of very friggin' bizarre murders start happening. I'm talking like
good visual novel shit.
They range from like, okay, I can see that, where a group of five high school kids commit suicide at once by jumping off the same building. But then you go, there was a man found in a subway, and for some reason he was pregnant with a child. Except no, somebody had actually just cut his stomach open and put a fetus in his gut and tied him back up. There's the other one where two people were found cut in half, but the bottoms of their body had been swapped. So, you know, the man had the woman stuff, the woman had the man stuff. Just, they get weirder that somebody eats their hand. That's a good one. Somebody doesn't have a brain. They just hollowed out their head and there's no brain. So, and this is all tied to a very big conspiracy. And when you have a main character who is prone to delusions, boy, does he really think he's a part of it. And things go real crazy.
Oh, this is delicious. No.
This is
so good.
Yeah.
This is so visual novel. Also.
Oh, it is.
When did this one come out?
2006 or 2008, I believe. Because they did Chaos Head, and then they did Chaos Head Noah a year later, which this version adds like six new routes to kind of flesh out the characters a little more. You may have probably seen art from this one too, because there are a lot of characters that have big purple fuck you swords. And I know,
very good.
I've seen a lot.
I think you've shared a few of those.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of these characters kind of posted out of context of people just really liking the swords and stuff. But
is this a Force Steins Gate?
Yes, this is literally the first science adventure game. Steins Gate was actually the second. So,
but it was still pretty late. It was 2008.
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't realize those games were kind of later on.
Yeah,
like
they're a little more recent. Like I think that this one still feels like it has a lot of early 2000s energy, though.
I completely get that.
The subject matter, the way certain CGs are there. It's like, man, this, you are so ape in fate right now. But you're doing it in a fun sci-fi way, so I like it more.
Exactly. That's like, it's just like, hit. Oh, damn it. I wish I could pull it off. There's, I was like, it's just like that other VN that does Fate, but with Nazis. That fucking game. All right, go ahead.
But, And this is kind of your typical visual novel stuff for a while, where you know you're gonna have routes where you get closer to each girl, because it seems to have had roots as a dating sim, and mm-hmm. I don't think they ever fully shook that off when they kind of retooled it to be more of like to focus more on the sci-fi stuff. I think overall this game is really good. The characters themselves, they left me a little cold. And that was something, even when I was playing it originally, it was just like, there's something here that feels, even after the Noah editions, where they get more nuanced routes, I still think a few of them come off a little one-dimensional, but I guess when you're trying to write, like, seven individual characters and kind of make them all, you know... a little
people.
More, yeah. Did some of them got a little more love in that area than others? But like the conspiracy, the mystery, all the pseudoscience shit, all that stuff is already dialed in. Like that is the part of science adventure that is why I am here. Give me your pseudoscience bullshit. Tell me how a microwave and a CRT TV can be a time machine. Make me believe it, and then they do it. So the
it was
way
DSE, Ray. That was the Nazi Fate.
Oh, right.
And
right.
Also 2009.
But yeah, like the all of that stuff like in this game feels really good. It's dialed in. This game is also just super atmospheric. It's got some great it's got some great dingy, dark, awful places. It's got some disturbing visuals and just an amazing soundtrack that just complements the whole thing well. And I think that like all of the aspects of the horror, the sci-fi and the mystery, all that stuff comes together really well. And when this game is good, like it's really freaking good. It's that good ass. You are glued to your screen, anticipating every next text box, visual novel. Good.
Oh, when the beautiful. VN is good.
Yes. And when it's not, it just kind of feels like a slog sometimes. Yeah. Like I thought I was going to dislike this a lot more than I did, but like the more that I got in and like, you know, kind of just like had been thinking about, I was like, no, like I like this a lot. I think that this serves as the foundation for a really cool, you know, little universe that they would go on to later build. Like I'm sitting here like I want this podcast to be over because I literally want to go start Chaos Child now. You know,
I'm like, you want this podcast to be over
just because I want to play Chaos Child. Like I definitely
don't want to be playing Meteos. No. Why would you even?
My bid is canceled.
I had a moment of like a come to Jesus moment where I. I turned on my DS. I was trying to be really subtle and went bah, bah, like 10 minutes ago. I was convinced y'all heard it and we're just like sitting there seething and I flung the DS away. Like, what have I become? I can't do this. My listeners, they need me. They need my focus.
To be fair, I have done similar things in the past while we were podcasting. I would like turn on or load a thing up on my phone and it would start making sounds. And I would literally just throw it.
Like, yep. I'm like, oh, fuck me. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. I recognize my mistake. I'm sorry. No medias.
No. But like, I think that if you like a really cool, like, visual novel that's got some great horror elements, a lot of atmosphere, some fun nitro action
values.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Love those nitro plus
and a story that just kind of keeps twisting and turning in really fun ways that like maybe it's a little edgier. I think that maybe that's it. Like it's just this game is edgy at times in ways that even I was just like, okay, man, I like edge, but you need to pull it back a little bit.
Like pats them on the head. Like, okay.
That's cute. That's cute.
You're cute.
I like that. Oh,
they cut open their stomach and put a baby.
Yeah. It's maybe a little, you know, edgy in that regard, but I'm still here for that shit in the end. This is a big one. Like, again, all of the science adventure games are pretty long. Like, this one took me about 40 hours. And I know Steins Gate was about 50, and Robotics Notes was 60.
Steins Gate is 50?
Steins Gate is 50 hours, but they still crammed it into an amazing 24-episode anime, though. So I will actually recommend people, like if you don't want to deal with how plotting and slow Steins Gate can be at times, you can just go watch the anime, and you're getting a perfect experience. So, yeah. So visual novels are still good. Anime is still good. I feel like I'm in an era now. I feel like for the last three episodes, I've talked about visual novels.
It's a good era to be in. I almost went into a visual novel era, and then I started playing puzzle games.
Yeah. Damn you, Meteos.
Damn you. Cecile complained to, was DMing a friend, like, God damn it. Almost had John completely bought in on Poyo. And Sakurai swooped in with his magic touch and pulled him away.
God damn it all. Rhett.
Hi.
Hey.
I did some stuff as well. I played a game.
A likely story.
Oh, just once in a while. I played a game, which is not something I feel like I'm going to be able to say on every podcast going forward.
Right?
I played The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom.
Oh! Okay.
Hit me up. I want to hear about this.
Hit me up, Daddy. I want to know.
So, I think it was 2019, they made a remake of Link's Awakening on the Switch, like Grezzo did, and it was extremely cute.
Yeah.
They nailed the art style. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I've already played Link's Awakening, though, guys.
Yeah.
So doesn't do a whole lot.
And it's very,
so I haven't actually played that.
It's very in line with the Super Mario RPG remake in that they didn't really change a lot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Link's Awakening, you don't really have to change anything.
No, it's a pretty perfect little game.
Maybe you have two action buttons.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into that right now. Is the issue with Link's Awakening is that you only have two action buttons?
Yep. They picked that game to be the one where shield is a verb.
Yeah.
Also, sword is unequippable.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, like, you have two.
Yeah.
But you're kind of always going to want to have the sword, or like most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, gloves are unequippable. Dash is equippable.
Yeah.
So that's I will admit, there was an improvement to be made there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So the funny thing about Echoes of Wisdom is that it carries that spirit forward. Where there is only one slot for your equipable Echo.
What are y'all doing?
It's very funny.
Yes. This on Ocarina.
Right.
10,000 years ago.
So I really did like this game, but the menuing, it ruins it for some people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like it's weird because this is a game that was made or at least released after Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
Which I feel like that has really influenced the style of Zelda going forward now.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, the animation for quest stuff is exactly as it was in, you know, those open world Zelda games. And the menuing to switch between your echoes is also like the equipable stuff in Tears of the Kingdom, where it's just a long line. And it's such a funny thing in this one because there's over 100 echoes that you can actually learn.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, no.
And you can sort it to, like, you know, have the most recently used ones on the left. There's also, you can press start to, like, actually bring up, like, a journal and have them all in a full proper grid. But because there's only one slot you can equip them to, doing almost anything will require a quick, like, whatever button it is.
That's
like left
way
trigger.
Too many inputs already.
Yeah. But I think this is a really interesting game because they are balancing top-down Zelda and open-world Zelda, like the last two main entries. Because this is, you know, they took the visual style from Link's Awakening remake,
yeah.
But have applied that to, hey, Now we're back in Hyrule. And I had to realize, like, oh, these are all new locations. Like, it's a whole new world map that they made for this game. Mm-hmm. Also, I thought this was going to kind of be, like, a short and breezy game. And then I realized, like, oh, no, no, no. This is longer than some of the other two top-down Zeldas. Like, it's longer than, what's the SNES one?
Link to the Past.
It's longer than Link to the Past.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah, it's long. It's I checked on, that's why I didn't get it. It was on how long it beat. It was almost 20 hours.
That, I think it's more like 30.
That's excessive for a game. Like, Link to the Past is already a game where it's just like, I won't actively choose to play it because it does run a little long in the tooth by the end for me. Mm-hmm. But this one, this did not strike me as one that was going to be longer.
Yeah, it's longer and there's no like second world map twist.
Oh, come on.
But one thing I liked, and I realized I hadn't had this for a long time, is, hey, dungeons are back.
Yeah, yeah. That's,
there's actual proper goddamn dungeons in this one.
Oh, goddamn
time. Which for me, I haven't played Skyward Sword. Mm-hmm. So like the last proper dungeon Zelda I played would have been like
Twilight Princess. When I played,
would have been for new ones, Twilight Princess, or I played Link's Awakening between then and now.
Right.
In
okay.
Like 2013. Mm-hmm. So it's like, because, you know, the open world games, the Divine Beasts and whatever they had in the sequel to that, mm-hmm. they were not good. Those are not dungeons, in my opinion. So the whole gimmick of this game is you can copy a ton of items as Echoes and use them to solve puzzles.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because none of these puzzles in them have this is the one way you have to do it solutions.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That seemed like the big pull.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you cannot beat the game with just tables.
No. Okay.
And Nintendo is so mean for making you shoehorn you into using certain Echoes. Yeah, I liked how the puzzles are definitely more present than they are in the open world games, but mm-hmm. I mean, I guess they had the shrines in those. I think the problem with those games is the shrines just diluted.
Yeah.
Across the entire
And they all open look the same.
Games. And they all look the same.
There's like a 30 seconds of loading for each one, so you can have one puzzle.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So the puzzle stuff is more centralized, but it is more of that, like, hey, there's multiple ways to solve this. And sometimes, like, if I died, I would actually, like, try to do a different solution the second time through a room. Yeah, I just don't know what else to say about it. I really did have a good time with this one. The story is a little basic because it is... You know, it's not quite as exactly the same as we have Link to defeat Worlds. Ganon. I haven't. Oh, right. That's the other one I skipped. I haven't played Between Worlds either.
Okay. This sounds like it's kind of, I mean, it's cute. It sounds like it's kind of in a similar boat. I'd probably rather play this one again than revisit that one. Play New Zelda one instead of revisit Link Between Worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was another one that tried to shake up the formula, but it was before Breath of the Wild, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you clarify how you felt about the dungeons in this one?
Yeah, they're good. I mean,
they're good. Good. Okay.
The one I happened to do last was kind of lame, which was like, oh no, like the ice dungeon was really good, and then the lava dungeon. You know, it's a Nintendo game. You know these themes.
Yeah. You know what you're getting.
Grass dungeon, lava dungeon, ice dungeon.
Yeah. I think the weird thing is that, like, there's not that many. It's kind of like five main ones, which, again, for a game that is longer than
30 hours.
Oof.
Yeah.
They're pretty beefy. But I think part of one of the flaws to me was because it's not very restrictive in where you can go, but it is kind of restrictive in what dungeons you can get into at any time. There's two you have to do first, and then you have a story event, and then you do the last three. So my problem was kind of that I just fucked around and explored the whole map early on. Mm-hmm. So I'd already gone to, it's not actually called Death Mountain, but I had gone to the mountain area and been all around there. So when it was time to actually do the dungeon, I just warped straight there and opened it up. And it was like, oh, kind of the journey up here was half of the dungeon itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now I'm just going in and like, oh, the dungeon's really short. Weird.
You already tabled your way up to the top?
Yeah. That game is funny, though, because there is some broken shit. Like, there, one of the echoes is just block of water, and you can stack them on top of each other vertically. And then you can just get, like, five blocks up. And,
okay.
And then you can just walk on trees.
Yeah, that's so, like, cool.
So you're just, like, it feels like you're going kind of softly out of bounds constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. Enjoy that. Yeah, the fact that you can walk on the tree boundaries is really cute.
It's really silly.
Yeah. It's the same kind of idea of, like, mm-hmm. the open world games of, like,
yeah.
What if instead of, like, strict lock and key stuff, we just mm-hmm. give you, like, a fun toy box and let you play around with it?
Yeah.
And I'm not opposed to that. I think it could be really cool. Mm-hmm. I wish the games were smaller.
Yeah.
This felt like it could have been smaller.
Mm-hmm. Which is a shame, because, like, the open world games are already fucking huge.
Yeah, the open world games are even bigger.
But so, like, it's like, oh, now here's the nice little one. This that where you play as Zelda. Really big.
Yeah, playing as Zelda is neat. Like, the story has to change a little bit from that. Also, spoilers, Ganon is only in, like, the first 5 minutes.
What? Interesting.
Which is weird, because he's on the cover of the game.
Oh, that's
box art.
What the hell?
That's funny.
It is kind of a funny twist.
It's very funny, you know, Lightning being on the cover of Final Fantasy X-2 or 13-2.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. It's kind of like that, where the opening of the game is you play as Link and defeat Ganon, and then Link just immediately gets captured by something else.
Oh,
and then you play the whole rest of the game as Zelda.
Fantastic.
But Ganon does not come back. I thought it was going to be some, like, dumb 11th hour twist.
Right.
Because of course he's going to, and then he really, really doesn't.
He just fucks off.
They don't even kill him. Ganon. They just mention, like, that blue pig he killed. It's kind of funny in how dismissive it is.
That's really good.
We don't need this guy.
Yeah, they find a way to make the story work without Ganon and just have a new antagonist for once.
Baki's which, back.
Thank God, because everything else is
sure. Yeah. Hey,
One thing that's funny, and this is because I haven't played any of the top-down games in ages, in the first couple Zelda games, the Zora were like this green kind of swamp monster creature, and then in Ocarina, they were these blue, smooth, you know, more humanoid.
Mm-hmm. They started having princesses that want to marry you.
Both of those are in this game. There's the River Zora and the Ocean Zora, and they have beef. And I thought that was funny.
That's cute.
That they're using designs from both eras together.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So it's funny seeing a top-down game that borrows a ton from the newer 3D stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had a good time with this. All of the, almost like 80% of the summons, though, are other enemies.
Yeah.
So the combat gets a little dry because it's just you kind of summoning enemies and then watching it play out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't give Zelda a sword. That's absurd.
No.
She's a girl.
Yeah. So they kind of go big for the climax by having, like, a big boss fight, and it's like, okay, I'm kind of just summoning a bunch of dudes.
I'm just summoning dudes. Yeah, that doesn't feel super satisfying. So
climax was maybe a little weak in that regard of, like, it's not a puzzle. Like, there's no puzzle here. It's just kind of like trying to be a faux action game for a bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I've, like, never had a Nintendo game crash.
Oh!
I had this game crash after, like, phase 2 of 3 for the final boss.
Oh, no!
It just went black during a transition, and it didn't come back to life. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, no.
And the funniest part is that I'm tearing them apart because this was such a bad crash relative to what I expect from Nintendo, is that there's a point of no return before the final dungeon that turns off auto saving.
Yeah.
Because even when I beat the game and went back, it was still at that save because the game just does not ever actually save again after
that
point.
That's fun.
So I had to the last dungeon's actually very short, so it was fine. It was like 10, 20 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the final boss. But it was like,
can't have a good fucking final dungeon anymore. It's like Link to the Past was the last one where we had like a last dungeon.
I was going to say, it's definitely not worse than like Ocarina's, which is
Ocarina's is like 4 tiny linear spokes.
Yeah.
And then I would say it's better than that, at least. They have a new gimmick for the last dungeon that they don't explore as thoroughly as I think they would have if they hadn't turned off autosave. Because the whole game is like saving every 5 minutes, because I looked at the files at one point and I'm like, oh, okay. And then, nope, last dungeon, last boss, no saves. They couldn't figure out a way to let you leave.
Insane.
Friggin'.
So yeah, that was a fun game.
Cool. Of the, I have like a little list of Switch games, and it's like Xenoblade 2, Princess Peach Showtime.
Oh, I've never played that one. I think Princess Peach Showtime, I think that's what you want for the short game.
Yes. I'm pretty sure that's the one that is. I think Princess Peach Showtime might be the one that's actually for 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
It looks cute.
Also that.
It's by the Kirby Epic Yarn devs.
Yeah.
And Peach, she has a bunch of outfits. Yeah. It looks cute.
I just think that one is very short, whereas Xenoblade 2 is, hey, that's a big boy.
Yeah.
That's a big boy. That's Xenoblade. You know what you're getting into.
Oh, right, I've got one of those. I was waiting to see if they patched X to get rid of the fucking AI upscaling, and I don't think they're gonna.
No.
God damn it.
Did they add 60 FPS?
Yeah, it's 60 now, but...
But now there's...
Now the backgrounds look fucking weird.
They are not letting you play that game, Rhett. You just gotta accept it. gotta pick your poison here if you want to play Xenoblade X.
Fucking unreal. I can't believe the poison pill ended up being... Also, the backgrounds are like the mountains in the distance are really shimmery and smooth because we're fucking AI-ing, upscaling
great.
It.
Great.
Why? After so long of waiting.
I just played it on a Wii U emulator.
There you go, bud.
Somehow that's kind of becoming the Bakuden game. I watched a lot of anime too. Kind of got to get moving here.
Yeah.
Let's chew through them.
Okay, so we're chewing. So last time I mentioned there were six shows that had, or there were four shows that had in the score in the sixes. I want to watch all of them anyways. So next up was The Story of Girls Who Couldn't Be Magicians. Hey, guess what this is about?
I bet it's a story about girls who could not be magicians.
Bingo! But they become magicians at the end.
Holy shit.
You never saw it coming.
I didn't. No, I'm riveted right now.
So imagine Little Witch Academia, but it's just not as good.
Yeah.
It's just like, I struggle to see any reason why you would ever watch this when that exists.
Yeah.
Because they are so similar. The only reason I really want to bring this up is because Little Witch Academia is also very metatextual about art.
Yeah, yeah.
And like animation itself. They do a thing in episode one of this where there's the characters or the classes that are allowed to become magicians, like they pass the test, and then they give them a little notebook that kind of draws the spell for them, and it looks kind of like a cell phone. And you're like, okay, we're doing something here. And then there's the characters that can't be magicians, but the teacher is like, hey, we're going to make you magicians anyway, but you have to draw your spells yourself. And I'm like, oh, this is taking on AI art.
Yeah.
That's just episode one. And then the whole rest of the show never builds on that.
Isn't there like an influx of shows now where people cast magic with their cell phones? I feel like that's a trope I'm seeing a lot lately.
That happened in another show I'll get to in a few minutes. But they also only do that once the whole time.
Oh, it was 16-bit sensation. Touches
oh,
on
really?
It too.
That's funny. So yeah, I would actually score the show a 6 or so. It was just there. The art is really good. That's the one thing is that it's very pretty, but and then the next show that has a criminally low score is Mecha Ude Mechanical Arms, which is a show that to me felt like it had the spirit of Symphogear Season 1.
Oh, that's glowing.
It's an anime original. John, this is the one I was sending you screenshots of. It has...
Oh, with the boy, with the punch boy.
The punch boy.
One punch boy.
His little arm.
Yes.
He just looks like Hibiki in the last episode, except shirtless.
The dream.
But he's orange and he's got like glowy wings. He flies around and he punches. And I'm like, yeah. Wings. Yeah, this one feels like hit some buttons for me. So of the four sixes, this was the best one by far. It's an anime original. It's 12 episodes. It moves. in a way similar to Symphogear, where it's like, oh my god, my screen just went dark because I haven't touched the mouse. I'm sorry. I'm just staring at my list of anime I was watching. Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. Solid characters and story. Like, it's not amazing, but it is like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it had heart, I guess. It felt like we're not just producing something by committee. Can you guys hear me right
now?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. My Discord was like, microphone lost when the screen went black. And I'm like, oh,
nah, you've been good.
Okay.
Yep.
And then I watched Mugen Wakusei Survive, which I think literally translates to Uninhabited Planet Survival. Mm-hmm. This is a 2003 50-episode kids show.
Oh, boy.
I loved this one.
What?
Yes.
Okay.
Which sometimes what's the title again?
Mugen Wakusei Survive.
Mugen Wakusei Survive. Yeah.
There we go. It came too up. Late. I have not seen Digimon, but the whole time I was just thinking, this looks like Digimon because it is that early 2000s DigiPaint style.
Yeah.
Like, it definitely has a look of that era. I just really like slow burn shows sometimes. Like, the fact that this is 50 episodes, it has a ton of time to breathe, to grow the characters. Like, they don't even get to the uninhabited planet until, like, episode 4.
All right.
Like, they actually don't rush into things. They kind of rush the ending for some reason.
Oh.
But it was fine. Like, it was great. Where this show starts and where it ends, I really did not see coming because, again, it is a slow burn that is like, hey, we have to learn how to make fire. Like, we have to, you know, build a shelter. Like, this is like the anime version of Lost.
Sure.
Where it's like
Digimon Adventure.
well, I haven't seen Digimon, unfortunately.
Okay, yeah.
The whole show is literally these kids stranded on an alien island.
Uh-huh.
But then it starts very like survivalist and then like Lost. Like, it gets kind of crazy by the end. It was funny when I looked at something up, I'm like, oh, Lost was 2004, though. God. This actually predates it. So they weren't like actually inspired by it.
Oh, we're ripping off Digimon.
Yeah.
Yep. J.J. Abrams was just like, I know what I need to. I have to make my own spin on this.
Fucking hack.
Fucking hack.
Of course. And then I watched Demon Lord 2099, which is such a good title.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. Because, that's pure 90s energy there.
Yeah. So it is the story of a demon lord who lost and then wakes up in the year is 2099. Also, at some point in those 500 years, Earth and his fantasy world collided and just became one planet.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, this is like a cyberpunk show with a bunch of magic and elves and stuff.
Oh, interesting.
And it's like, the first 7 episodes, the first arc is really good. And I was like, hey, this really has surprised me. Like, good energy here, good mix of, mm-hmm. you know, anime battles with, you know, heroes and demons, and also like hacking scenes with the cool hacker girl that you obligatory need in a show like this. And then the second arc sucked. Oh. I don't know what happened. It has the most obvious like light novel energy of, hey, episodes 1 through 7 are the first book, and then episodes, you know, the next 5 episodes are the second book, and then it ends. The last 5 episodes are like they go to a magic academy and the whole show becomes about this new girl. And I'm just like, where's the Demon Lord part and where's the 2099 part? Like, the whole tone just shifts immediately.
Weird.
So, kind of That's a crazy. Very, very tepid recommendation there.
Mm.
And then finally, I watched the anime adaptation. This just ended in like March. The adaptation of the visual novel Gnosia.
Oh, yeah. I've been wanting to play this game, but just never got around to it.
Mm-hmm. It's a game I was like, I definitely should play that, but like, I kind of get the vibe that the part of playing the game kind of sounds like a pain in the ass.
It definitely seems like there's a lot of tedium to it.
Mm-hmm. Because even in the anime, there's a bit of repetition.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The plot of this is that, oh God, how do we explain this? Because some things are variable. This is a time loop show.
Yeah.
How about we start there? First, the main character becomes in a loop in the first episode, and then even if they die, they restart this game. So a number of characters are on a spaceship, and one or more are infected by this thing called the Gnosia, and they are intent to kill the others and take over the ship.
It's just Among Us.
There's an imposter among them.
It's not Among Us. It's Mafia or Werewolf, which is the game Among Us was also inspired by. They live in the... They do, like, animatics to kind of explain things, like, very literally, and they just show pictures of werewolves in this.
Sure.
Okay. Well, they're not on a spaceship, though. Like, Among Us was on a spaceship.
Fair.
So I feel like it's a little bit closer to Among Us than it is to Mafia.
They do different... So when the Gnosia kill someone, though... Okay. The reason it's closer to Werewolf is because it also keeps, like, the day-night cycle of that original game.
Interesting.
Where Among Us is just fucking chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Among Us is just real-time chaos.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing about this show is how hard they have to, you have to bend your suspension of disbelief to explain why are they doing this way? Why does everything line up so perfectly to Mafia?
Mm-hmm.
Because like the day is the warp, and but they can only kill one person during the warp for ? reasons. And then they immediately go into the meeting, and then they have another warp. It's like, why is the ship doing it like this? Why do they keep starting and stop? But whatever. It's Mafia. Or Werewolf. I don't know why I keep calling it Mafia. And then they also get into, like, roles from those games.
Oh.
Where, like, oh, one character has doctor credentials. Yeah. One character has engineer credentials. So during the warp, you can... investigate another character to be like, hey, are you the Gnosia? Like, it really is just Werewolf, not Among Us, like, because some of that stuff all got stripped out from Among Us. But I understand the spaceship part, also very similar.
Rhett is on a war path. He wants to convince us that the spaceship imposter anime is not like Among Us.
It's like Among Us, but again, I've actually played Mafia, so like, when they're bringing in, like, literally every single rule from that game, yeah. It's like, okay. Like, at some point, they even have the rule where the computer will just tell them, oh, these characters stayed on the ship the whole time, so they are guaranteed to be human. You don't have to suspect them.
Right.
So, like, every single... That's the thing about this is, like, even though it's a time loop, the rules keep changing on every loop. Where it's like, the same characters aren't the Gnosia every time. Different characters will have, you know, the special roles, perks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, in Among Us, when you vote someone out, they get shot into space and die. In this, they just put them into cold sleep.
Oh.
Interesting.
So that's the rules of the game. And, like, the first third or so of the anime is kind of a little dry because, hey, it's just watching other characters play this social deduction game.
Yeah.
It definitely, but by the end, it definitely gets there with, hey, let's have some big cathartic visual novel moments.
All right.
Good. Like, there's definitely parts where, like, in this loop, the main character really got to know this one character, and I cried at the end.
Oh.
And you can kind of feel, like, a little bit checkboxy when there's, like, three of those episodes in a row.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, we're learning about all the women because of course you are.
We're doing the routes now.
Yeah. And seems to be a pain in the ass about the game is because it's a game and it's random.
Yep.
It sounds a little bit like Blueprints where
you've got to wait for the right goddamn shit.
You have to have the RNG lineup so that you're even able to get the information you need left.
Yep.
Because in the anime, it's also like, it's not just about winning. It's about collecting all the information available.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some... what I believe to be anime original episodes at the end, they kind of extend the epilogue and they also connect it to the true ending because I looked it up, like the way the true ending works in the game, you couldn't do in an anime. So I think they smooth it over in a really interesting way because if you think of something like Nier Automata, like the ending of the anime for that one is interesting because, hey, you can't just do ending E straight is as an anime.
That doesn't quite work.
That's not going to work. So Gnosia, turns out, also has a very cool, this would only work in a game ending that they do what they can. And like, I thought it was a really good story overall.
Cool. Yeah,
I would definitely recommend this anime.
Nice.
But Oh, yeah. So, John, I mentioned that at one point, like, they hadn't tied off a few of the loose ends. They do it in the last, like, 5 minutes. I was like, oh, you got there. You left that dangling, and they got there right at the finish line.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, I was pretty satisfied with that one. So that's Rhett's Anime's Binge in under 30 minutes.
In under 30 minutes. My guy. Proud of you. It was a lot. They were all sixes, but I expected, like, more mediocrity with how people talk about sixes, right?
Oh, no. Only Mechanical Arms and Girls Who Couldn't Be Magicians were the sixes.
Oh, okay, because you just said you had four sixes.
Noce has, like, an 8.3 or something. Like, people love that one.
Okay, I thought you meant you had four sixes and was just like, uh-huh.
No.
Okay.
Two of them were last episode.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that does look like it is going to put us at the end of another little journey of yapping together. So before we head out of here, John, why don't you let everybody know at home what they can do to make you happy?
Play Medios.
There.
It's great.
That's
and you can visit farawaytimes.com.
And Rhett.
Oh, wait. I have an interview coming out with Electric Airship before too long. They just talking about they're an RPG YouTuber and publisher. So we talked about the Cookie Cutter Jam and just some of my RPG work.
Right. Okay.
Nice.
Okie doke.
Be excited for that.
Very cool. Rhett.
I don't know. Play Medios.
Play Medios, everybody. And until we see you again, remember, we are the podcast that loves you. We are the only ones that love Medios.